The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to from the For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. First of all, I want to wish the United States a very, very happy 247th birthday. This program will broadcast on July 4th, and I figured it was only appropriate that we at least celebrate in a mild way. Okay, let's start off with inspiration. Lessons from my daughters. Thanks to my all grown-up girls, I've learned a whole new way to roll. And it shows a gentleman with a looks like a woman's probably in her mid-20s or so, sitting by the side of a lake with two motorcycles. One Sunday afternoon in 2014, I was southbound on Highway 427 in Toronto, aboard my purple 1993 Harley-Davidson Sportster. This stretch of road, some 12 miles long, is one of the most heavily trafficked in North America. At certain points, there are 14 lanes of traffic, much of it moving at 70-plus miles per hour. I was in one of the center lanes, keeping a close eye on an 18-wheeler about 100 yards ahead. I wasn't worried for myself. I've been biking for decades. My eyes were riveted on my 23-year-old daughter, a novice rider who was balanced on her recently purchased BMW F650 GS. She was right behind that semi, in its dark shadow, looking as vulnerable as a snowflake. Thoughts swirled. One wrong move and our world ends. I am powerless to help her. I let this happen. Am I the worst father ever? My daughter, Ewa Carter, a student at the time, made it home safely and hasn't stopped riding since. She's put thousands of miles on that BMW, riding from our Toronto home east to Halifax, south to Tennessee, and west to Vancouver, in all types of weather and road conditions. The best part is that for exactly 5,100 miles of those miles, I've been riding with her. I've had some stunning adventures with you as identical twin sister Rhea Carter, too. In fact, both my girls have taken me places I never imagined I'd go. One afternoon in August 2016, Rhea, at the time a funeral director and now a psychotherapy student, arrived at our house and told my wife Helen Zabalowski, that's an interesting name, and me that she was taking me to Burning Man, a festival in the Black Rock Desert in Nevada. Our daughters had attended a few years early, frolicking in the heat with 70,000 other hippies, and they decided, without consulting me, that this was my year to go. Not only had Rhea attained a pair of hard-to-get tickets, she's also played our plane fare. If I didn't go, she'd be out $2,000. So I said, okay, it would be worth finding out what my kids knew about their dad that I didn't. Burning Man is for adventure-seeking West Coast types, computer whizzes from Silicon Valley, UCLA artists and other outside-the-lines colorers. Why did Rhea think I should go? The only drugs I take are Tylenol and hair fever meds. I'd been chair of the PTA at my kid's grade school and a family columnist at a woman's magazine. A female friend in college once pegged me as a church-going two-and-a-half kids with a minivan and picket-tight fence-type guy. She was absolutely right. When we arrived in Nevada, it was late and dark. Rhea and I soon got separated. The next morning as I searched for her, one of the first campers to greet me was a slender 30-something woman with long brown hair wearing absolutely nothing. For the record, I was fully clothed. She asked what I was looking for, and I said, "My daughter." "What you need is a hug," she said, and proceeded to administer one. "You'll find your daughter," she reassured me. I did, a few hours later. Burning Man takes place in a temporary city, where attendees, called burners, shed normal life and throw a 9-day party that culminates in the burning of a giant wooden statue. Everybody travels around the site on sparkling decorated bicycles, and the music stops only for a few hours around dawn, when most of the crowd sleeps off the night before. Money rarely changes hands. The only thing you can buy are ice and coffee. Otherwise, people share their food, booze, and whatever else they have with complete strangers. You never know what marvel you'll find around the next corner. One mobile art installation was the fuselage of a full-size decommissioned 747. Imagine a Mad Max setting with a pop-up concert and Cirque du Soleil-caliber gymnastic displays, and a 33-foot-tall wooden pirate ship, peopled by a few dozen champagne-swigging burners, moving through the central plaza like a Trojan horse. But the most important part? Burning Man was a parenting milestone. Rhea had tried to give me the experience of a lifetime and succeeded. To this day, I can't stop telling people about it, obviously. When it comes to high-proof fathering lessons, though, few adventures compared to the motorcycle trip I've shared with Ewa. By the way, the daughter's name is Ria, R-I-A, and Yua, E-W-A. Our first trip in August 2017 was a winding trip around the Catskills and Finger Lakes area of New York. We avoided interstates and spent the week on touristic scenic back roads. At one point, I found myself riding alongside a Catskill meadow not far from Woodstock, keeping pace with the fawn and yelling, "Go, Bambi, go!" On the second day, we stopped in a small town for ice cream. I asked the woman at the picnic table next to me, "What's the name of this town?" "Interlaken," she answered. "Where are you trying to get to?" "Me?" "We don't know." It occurred to me then that I'd always wanted to attempt this no-schedule kind of trip, when you ride just for the sake of riding. Ask any middle-aged motorcyclist, and they've all fantasized about doing the easy rider thing, tossing their wristwatches into the ditch and heading into the horizon without a plan. Now traveling with no destination became a trademark of my rides with my daughter. Since we almost never knew where we were going, we were almost never disappointed when we arrived. Pulling off the highway at the end of each day carried with it exhilaration. The reason to celebrate? We hadn't crashed. Because the truth is, life on a motorbike is one close call after another. En route, riders must stay focused 100% of the time. A tiny patch of loose gravel can be fatal. I used to say I found it nerve-wracking, but you was at a different take. To me, motorcycling is like meditation. And I came to realize she was right. At the end of the day of riding, after checking whatever family-run roadside inn we'd picked, I'd be exhausted but feeling mentally clearer than ever. After a roadhouse meal and a Budweiser or two, sleep was never elusive. One summer, we toured northern Michigan. That odyssey included a stop to ask directions at the Big Ugly Fish Tavern, whose claim to fame is being the diviest bar in Saginaw. It also involved riding more than a mile with no helmet, which is legal for adults in Michigan, albeit with insurance conditions. While not advisable, it felt as if we were secretly skinny dipping in a neighbor's pool. We also biked to a town called Bad Axe simply because it was a town called Bad Axe. There were a few exceptions to the no destination rule. On our 2019 trip, after riding for 2 days, you and I arrived in a town called Deals Gap, North Carolina. That's the starting point of the infamous Tale of the Dragon, a must-ride for any motorcyclist. It's 11 miles on two narrow lanes with more than 300 curves. Much of one side is a wall of a mountain, the other is a sheer drop with no guardrails. A sign at the beginning of the route reads, "Motorcycles. High crash area, next 11 miles." And I've known two people, this is a personal aside, I've known two people who have ridden that, and they said it's awesome. As if to prove the sign right, about 15 minutes into the route, my front wheel hit a dirt beside the pavement. I lost control and dozed clumsily down into the shallow, grassy ditch, shuddering to a stop. Since 55 yards farther, there was no ditch, only a cliff. My incident could have been a lot worse. The only thing that hurt was my ego. Had I known how challenging the Tale of the Dragon was going to be, I would not have ridden it. I am a boringly cautious motorcyclist. The Dragon was Yua's succession, and I am from the bottom of my heart grateful that she led me down that path. The route was an absolute thrill ride, and my minor wipeout only added to the excitement. In August 2020, Yua moved to Toronto from Toronto to Vancouver to work as an American Sign Language interpreter. She rode her bike west, and I accompanied her for the first 810 miles along the north shore of Lake Superior. Yua had been going through a rough time emotionally and wanted to cover the remaining 1,864 miles solo. So right there at the top of the world's largest freshwater lake, we hugged, and she headed west while I turned back east. A few hours later, I hit a tricky part of the highway, steep and coiling, and one section actually had me riding west once again, staring straight into the blinding sunset. I realized through teary eyes that the twists and turns on this stretch pretty much summed up my emotions as I saw my daughter ride off that day. The next year, 2021, our week-long bike trip in southern British Columbia coincided with some of the worst forest fires the area had ever seen. Boy, that's being repeated right now. I met Yua in Vancouver, and we headed north on the Sea to Sky Highway, past Whistler, past Pemberton, and on to Cache Creek, where we found ourselves between mountains on fire. We had no idea what we were heading into. The fires had happened so fast. The valley seemed consumed by flames. The next day, as we made our way northwest along Highway 16, we saw striking reminders of those of whose backyard we were biking through. First, a huge brown bear crossed right in front of us, and then a few miles later, a sleek tan-colored cougar. 3 days later, we reached Prince Rupert, almost to the top of the province's coast, aboard the posh Northern Adventure Ferry for a scenic 16-hour cruise to Port Hardy on Vancouver Island. What made this trip so special was it was not just that it was the first where we actually had a plan. It was that Yuma took it upon herself to be the planner. We didn't even have a conversation about it. She just took care of it all. Yuma had not only arranged to borrow from a friend the bike I was riding, she organized the itinerary and even purchased the ferry tickets. She wouldn't let me pay. A baton had been passed from one generation to the next. Wordlessly, I did not see that coming. My old Harley has no gas gauge. When the main gas tank is empty, the bike slows, and you reach down with your left hand and switch to the much smaller auxiliary tank. At that point, you only have a few miles worth of gas left. You'd think that after all these years, I know better than to run out. But there I was, on the first day of one of my annual trips with you, on a lonely stretch of highway heading toward the U.S. border, and my bike sputtered to a stop. There were no homes or businesses in sight. Yuma was getting smaller as she headed into the distance, not realizing she was riding alone. When she finally realized I was no longer in her rearview mirror, she turned back. As a father, it's humbling to be in that position. Throughout my adult life and raising my kids, I followed my own parents' lead. I stood aside and offered support while Yuma, Rhea, and their younger brother, Michael, found their own way in life. I seldom said no. But when Yuma said she wanted to wait with the out-of-gas bike on the side of a country road while I went for gas, I said, no way. I would not leave her vulnerable on the side of a country road for goodness knows how long. She insisted, but I was firm, and Yuma finally gave in and went off in search of gas. Because no matter how old your kids get, you never stop being a dad. Drama in real life. The sailor was trapped inside the flooding cabin of his overturned boat. As the hours slipped by, so did his chances. The Mariner versus the Sea. It's just past 8 p.m. on August 1st. Lawrence Campbell, Camprubi, it's an interesting name, C-A-M-P-R-U-B-I, is about 15 miles off the coast of northwestern Spain, hoisting the mainsail on the deck of the 39-foot sailboat Jean. Ever since he left Lisbon, Portugal, the day before, he's been fighting the elements, but he is in his element, too. Camprubi is aiming to qualify for the Route de Rome, a 4,077-mile race held every 4 years from Saint-Malo in France to Guadeloupe, a group of islands in the Caribbean. On a night that's anything but calm, the solo athlete is tackling, adjusting, to ensure that the vessel gets to his destination of Cherbourg, France, about 1,050 miles to the northeast. After more than 12 hours of sailing, Camprubi decides to take a much-needed break. While a beacon automatically broadcasts his position to Route de Rome organizers every 15 minutes, the waves batter the Jean in language all their own, screams, whistles, crashes, and roars. He knows that in the distance is the craggy peninsula Cape Finisterre, or the end of the world, but 6 to 10 foot waves have turned his surroundings into a uniform dark gray. Tall and lanky, the 62-year-old has been sailing since his 20s and is eager to tackle the Route de Rome. By the way, that's R-O-U-T-E space D-U space R-H-U-M, which he considers the Everest of sailing. A stylist for a Portuguese-based fashion footwear company, Camprubi lives with his partner, Virginie Philippe, and their two children in Marseille, where he has been training for months. The race would be a test of strength and perseverance, and Camprubi, a lifelong cyclist and runner, has also been doing weight training to build his core muscles so that he'd be better able to keep his balance in the rough seas. And tonight, it is indeed rough. As Camprubi lies in the cockpit, resting, a wave crashes into the boat, which suddenly slows down. Opening his eyes, Camprubi sees the boat beginning to list to one side, and he knows what has happened. He has lost the keel, the weighted fin that runs along the bottom of the boat to keep it upright. The Jean is and that spell is J-E-A-N-N-E, and I don't know whether that's pronounced in French as Jean or Jean. The Jean is capsizing. You have 15 seconds to get below deck before the boat flips over, he tells himself. Your life depends on it. Move. Once below, he attempts to close the door, but water keeps rushing in, making the task impossible. The Jean violently flips upside down, bobbing in the waves. Camprubi has been thrown to the ceiling and is crouched there on what is now his floor. His prescription eyeglasses are smashed, as are the computer and other electronics, and the pieces are floating in seawater. He ventures farther into the boat to retrieve his survival kit, then returns to what he judges to be the safest spot by the door. Almost 20 minutes after capsizing, he sets off his SOS signal and grabs his red survival suit. Made of waterproof neoprene, it's bulky, stiff onesie, complete with hood and attached bodies. He knows that adrenaline is keeping him warm, but once it wears off, the suit is his best defense while waiting for whatever help might come. He's in an air bubble. The water, about 68 degrees, is now up to his chest. So on goes the suit, one cramping, chilled leg at a time. At 8:23 p.m., moments after Kamprubi activated his emergency beacon, which contained both a radio transmitter and a global positioning system, GPS, the Spanish Coast Guard detected it. Immediately, an elaborate, tightly choreographed effort was put into action, complete with two rescue ships, three helicopters, and five divers. It was black outside and dangerous. The questions on everyone's mind was, how could the vessel's lone occupant survive in such weather, no matter how experienced? At 9:26 p.m., one of the helicopter pilots spotted something white in the swirling, angry sea, the bottom of a sailboat that appeared to be missing its keel. One option, to secure the vessel with slings and hoisted it onto one of the ships with a crane, was dismissed as foolhardy because of the wind and the danger it posed to Kamprubi. Besides, no one knew what was happening inside. A diver was lured by cable onto the hull of the boat, tasked with checking for signs of life. He banged on the hull, shouting that help had arrived, but his words blew away with the wind. Kamprubi is finishing put on the top part of his survival suit when he hears something banging on the hull. Thump, thump, thump. He tries to hammer back, but his arms get entangled in the suit. "I'm here," he shouts. "I'm here." Then nothing. Was he heard? He curls up in a corner to wait, the water sloshing and rising ever higher. His air bubble can't last forever. "Help will come," he silently recites. "Help will come. Help will come." Still, a darker thought intrudes. Maybe I've been abandoned. To the rescuer's surprise and relief, they heard the sailor shouting back. But for everyone's safety, they put off any rescue attempts until the next morning when calmer sea and daylight would prevail. The question was, would Kamprubi still be alive when they came back? Time was not their ally. He could die from exposure, or he could drown, but they had no choice. That evening, a representative from France's Ministry of Defense in Marseille phoned Virginie Philippe, but she assumed it was a telemarketer and didn't answer. When she checked her voicemail 15 minutes later, she heard a message telling her that Kamprubi's emergency beacon had been set off. Her world fell apart. "Is Laurent okay?" was she asked when she called back. "We don't know," came the reply. And so the waiting began. The couple's daughter, 12-year-old Jean, stayed beside her mom while their son, 3-month-old Paul, slept. Philippe called Richard Santi, Kamprubi's friend and sailing team manager, to see if he could find out what was happening. At midnight, she received an update from an organizer on the Route des Rhumes. All he could tell her was that the boat had capsized and the Spanish Coast Guard was involved. Trying to tamp down her panic, Philip focused on being calm in front of her daughter, who eventually fell asleep. Unable to sleep herself, Philippe watched as the hands of the clock slowly crawl past 1, then 2, then 3, then 4 a.m. Just past 8 a.m., her phone rang again. It was the Ministry of Defense with bad news. The chance of finding him alive is practically zero. It was time to tell Kamprubi's family. Philippe called by calling Kamprubi's brother, who assured her that Kamprubi was too stubborn to give up. "He will fight to the end," he told Philippe. "Trust me, if anyone's going to survive something like this, it's him." On one level, Philippe agreed. Certainly the man she had been living with for 14 years lived large and took risk, but he'd never been one to panic when bad things happened. And right now she had no choice but to have faith. In the cabin of the Jean, Kamprubi is disheartened and so tired. Water, still seeping, sloshing, and spraying, has filled more space, shrinking his air bubble. The water is also mixed with gas from an engine he had on board for emergency use, which he never got a chance to use. Not only is the smell overwhelming, but the gas stings his skin, and he has to keep his eyes shut tight to protect them. Time means nothing now, minutes and hours flowing to each other, in a jumble. Maybe it's 2 a.m. He can't remember when he last ate or slept. Don't think about that. Focus. Don't fall asleep. He knows that the air bubble that's keeping him alive continues to shrink, and the water level is kept higher on his chest. With a grunt, he reaches out to grasp safety handles attached to the side of the hull. He knows he needs to keep as much of himself out of the water as he can if he's to avoid hypothermia. From time to time, Kamprubi tries to concentrate on listening for a sound. anything that signals the Coast Guard has not given up on him. But as life gets stronger, there is only quiet and calm. Images of his life crowd his mind. Not his life flashing before his eyes, but the things he will miss about his life. Things like conversation with his three adult children from his first marriage. And also what he won't get to be there for Paul saying Papa for the first time. And taking his first steps. Jean graduating from middle school. And now Camp Ruby has been gripping the handles for hours, and he's exhausted. He lets go of them. He's floating on his back, arms and legs splayed. But when the water laps over his face, he sputters and alert again. And then he hears knocking. Just before 9 a.m., some 13 hours after Camp Ruby boat flipped, two divers made their way to the Jean. The seas had calmed, and the job was to secure the boat with three giant yellow buoys. The idea to keep the boat afloat while the team conducted either a rescue or a salvage operation. When it was secured, the divers knocked on the hull. And there's a picture here of Camp Ruby, his Jeanine, his daughter, his son, and his lover, and a picture also of the boat completely upside down, completely ripped. When it was secure, they didn't expect to get a response, but they heard shouting. Against all odds, against the mercurial sea and wind that had toppled him over, Laurent Camp Ruby was alive. Diving below the surface to peek into the cabin window, they saw his red booties moving. But wires and jagged pieces of broken wood and metal floated underneath the hull, blocking the diver's access to the cabin door. So they began this painstaking job of diving under again and again to clear a path. It was slow, dangerous work with objects that could slice or snag them. Bit by bit, 1 hour flowing into a second hour, then a third, they collected and disposed, rising to the surface when a bag was full, then diving back down again. "You have to stay alive," Camp Ruby told himself, but he knew that now was not the time to start doubting his rescuers. As one of the helicopters positioned itself above the Star Gavia, a bright orange 130-foot tugboat, a diver knelt on top of the hull of the sailboat, explaining in shouts to Camp Ruby what they needed him to do. Camp Ruby learned there would be no helicopter lift up the Jean up because the vessel was already in pieces, that no divers would smash through the window to pluck him out because it wasn't big enough. Besides, water would rush in and pull him under. The only way out was through that door. Tired and chilled from so many hours of exposure, his muscles cramping, Camp Ruby understood that surviving this was still up to him. Because as soon as the diver opened the door, he would have to swim out fast, with everything he had to avoid the torrent of seawater waiting on the other side to pin him down and drown him. He'd have one chance. The rescue began just after noon. Holding his breath, Camp Ruby waited by the door, treading water, poised to break through when it opened. He forced himself to breathe slowly, calmly as he waited, and suddenly the door opened. Acting on instinct, he was through like a shot, swimming using adrenaline in his arms and bicycle-hardened legs to power against the rush of water. He swam under the hull and made a right turn to go up, 6 feet to the surface. He broke through the surface, gasping for air. A diver, the same one who had knocked on the hull night before, was waiting to attach a harness to the helicopter to hoist him aboard. The men embraced. "I was so afraid you wouldn't survive the night," the driver admitted. Camp Ruby answered, "I was so afraid you wouldn't come back for me." When Camp Ruby boarded the helicopter that would take him to the hospital in the nearby Spanish coastal city of A Corona, his legs buckled as he bent over to catch his breath. It was 12:35 p.m., more than 16 hours since the Jean had collapsed. Soon he'd be treated for exposure and hypothermia, and doctors would flush the gasoline out of his eyes. He would learn that he'd lost 15 pounds during those 16 hours, all of it muscle. But on the helicopter, none of that mattered. All he wanted was to talk to Philippe. When someone on board finally handed him a phone, neither of them could speak. They were both crying too hard. How about a little bit of inspiration? Wait for it. Wait for it. To enjoy life more, embrace anticipation. Allie Pierce knows how to plan a vacation. A few months out, she goes on a crazy Google spree, constructing a spreadsheet of all the things she wants to do and see. She scrutinizes the menu of restaurants she is planning to visit. She uses a picture of the destinations as her phone book lock screen image and downloads a countdown app. "What's so exciting about a trip is the anticipation before it," says Pierce. Founder of a luxury travel company called Gals Abroad Getaways, which plans group trips for women, experts say she is probably right. Numerous studies suggest that having something to look forward to boosts your mood and lower your stress. Imagine the good things ahead of you makes us feel better in the current moment, says Simon A. Reggio, chief psychologist at Montefiore Medical Center and Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. It can increase motivation, optimism, patience, and decrease irritability. Of course, we can't just book a flight every time we need a little cheering up, but there are ways to harness and incorporate the power of anticipation into your everyday life. Get excited about a lot of little things. Anticipating a smattering of small, delightful experiences can be as enjoyable as looking forward to one big event, says Carrie L. Weiland, associate psychologist at Tulane University in New Orleans. At the end of every day, write down one thing you're excited for tomorrow, she says. Maybe it's a new book, or getting donuts, or a package you're expecting. The accumulation of these many thrills means you will still reap the benefits of looking forward to something, even if it's not a big-ticket reward, says Christian E. Waugh, a psychology professor who studies anticipation at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Plus, with the nearer stuff, there's more of a sense of going to happen for sure, he says. You've got more control over small gatherings in this evening than a vacation in 6 months. Connect with your future self. Research has shown that feeling as if you are on a path to your future self can have a positive effect on your well-being by snapping you out of short-term thinking. Thinking ahead may help you prioritize your health and maybe even act more ethically. While it's fun to daydream about your future self, the steps you need to take to get there can be intimidating. So start with clarifying the things in your life you value the most, Rico says. Then set goals around them. If your priority is staying fit and healthy as you age, maybe your goal is to run a 5K. But don't wait to feel motivated before you take that first step. Instead, when you do something towards your goal, focus on how motivated you feel afterward, not before, he says. As you start seeing progress, it will get easier. You'll look forward to doing the things that get you closer to your future self. Consider a gentle bribe. Anyone who has taken a child to get a flu shot and then ice cream afterwards know the powers of building anticipation for a thing you don't want to do by pairing it with the thing you do. In a study called Temptation Bundling, participants who were given an iPod loaded with audiobooks that they could listen to only at the gym worked out 51% more than those who weren't. It was so incentivizing that when the study ended, 61% of the subjects they would pay to have gym-only access to the audiobooks. To build anticipation for the group vacation she leads, Pierce sends clients detailed packing lists a month in advance. I get equally as excited about the clothes I'm going to wear on the trip as I do about the trip itself, she says. But the promise of a new shirt works just as well for things you are not jazzed about. Let's say you've got a work presentation you're nervous about, she says. If you've also got a new outfit you can't wait to wear, you're going to look forward to it more. Focus on experiences. Several studies have suggested that we get more happiness from anticipating experiential purchases than the material goods themselves. Ramping up anticipation is an important trick of the trade for Lilia Finette, a charity auctioneer. If it's dinner with a celebrity, for example, she will paint a picture of all the ways that dinner could turn out. Maybe you and the celebrity become buddies. Maybe they become a godparent to your kid. And right as I am about to hammer down the gavel and sell the lot, I'll turn to the audience and say, "So, they'll be dining with her new best friend, George Clooney, at Gramercy Tavern, and you'll be sitting at home eating pizza," Finette says. Dinner with Clooney aside, you can still maximize anticipation before an experience such as a date. Choose an activity that is meaningful to you or a place you want to show the other person, says Erica Kaplan, Vice President of Membership for the Matchmaking Service 3-Day Rule. When you're looking forward to two things, the date itself, but also introducing the other person to your world and seeing how they react, she explains. Remember that anxiety and anticipation can coexist. The flip side of positive anticipation is anticipatory anxiety. And the fascinating thing, Waugh says, that is they often happen together. Anxiety and excitement are sister emotions, she says. Think about when you're getting married or you're having your first kid. It's a jumble of both. But it is detrimental only when you only focus on the anxiety part and neglect the excitement part, he adds. The key is acknowledging the happy, positive aspect of what you are doing along with the nervous feelings. Research suggests that when you reappraise anxious things as exciting, it actually makes you feel better about them, Waugh says. Make something up. If parties are something you look forward to, don't wait for the holiday to celebrate. Just invent an occasion. Throw a birthday party for the dog, or host a pancake breakfast for all the kids on your street. Need some inspiration? Bowtie Day, Lasagna Day, and Spoil Your Dog Day are all coming up this summer. Whether it's a party or a bribe or a nightly list, anticipation can be a powerful tool in manipulating our emotions. When TV writer Annabeth Chow tries to look forward to something she is dreading, such as a four-day drive she just made from Los Angeles to her home in New Orleans, she uses this trick. "I basically tell myself a little story about what might happen," she says. If you frame it within, well, what if it's an adventure? It's easier to get excited about it. And with that, we'll roll over to Consumer Reports. Product update. The latest readings from our labs. The best sunscreens of the year. How much protection are you really getting? Our ratings reveal which products do it right. And interesting enough, there's something here I've never seen before. 100 overall score. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Safeguard your skin. Our test found 9 great lotions and sprays and one with a perfect score. Coppertone Water Babies Lotion SPF 50. When you're shopping for sunscreen, the choices can seem overwhelming, and chances are the thing you zero in on when trying to pick the best product is the SPF number. But the stated SPF doesn't always tell the whole story. Consumer Reports tests suggest that not all sunscreens live up to the SPF listed on the label. We did find 9 sunscreens to recommend it, and several others that are decent picks. But of the 68 lotions and sprays in our test this year, all labeled SPF 30 to 100, an incredible number, 53, tested at less than SPF 30, the minimum SPF the American Academy of Dermatology recommends you use. The type of sunscreen doesn't matter. Both lotions and sprays missed the mark on our tests. The brand name and the price doesn't make a difference either. In our test, we've often found that one product performs really well while another from the same manufacturer does not, says Susan Booth, who oversees CR sunscreen test. And there's no guarantee that a $40 sunscreen would be more protective than one that cost under $10. A sunscreen's SPF only tells you how well the product filters out the sun's burning ultraviolet UVB rays. You also want a sunscreen to shield your skin for the UVA rays. But so that's why Consumer Reports test sunscreens for UVA protection as well. Here, we got more reassuring results. Though there was a variation in performance, most of the sunscreens we found were to be highly protective against UVA rays. How do you know if your sunscreen is truly protecting your skin? Our expert advice and the ratings stating on page 21, which I'll look at, can help you make the smartest choices. What CR's tests found? 5 of the lotions and 4 sprays in our test are recommended. 1, Coppertone Water Babies Lotion SPF 50, got a perfect score of 100. Some sunscreens are among CR's recommended buys despite there being a difference between the label's SPF and our testing average. These got an overall score of 67 or higher, perform well for UVA protection, and an average SPF in our test close to or above SPF 30, Booth says. For example, La Roche-Posay Anthelos Melt-In Milk Lotion SPF 60 averaged SPF 33 and has excellent UVA protection. Black Hill sunscreen Make It Matte Gel SPF 45 also averaged SPF 33 and has a very good UVA protection. But many popular products fell short. For example, La Roche-Posay Anthelos Clear Screen Face Lotion SPF 50 only averaged SPF 13. Supergroup Play Antitoxidant Mist SPF 50 tested an SPF 8, and Australian Gold Botanical Miniker Lotion SPA 30 averaged SPF 4. Those companies didn't respond to requests for comments. It's not that lower source sunscreens don't offer any protection, Booth says, but in some cases it's very minimal. This is complicated by the fact that most people don't use enough sunscreen. In tests, subject's skin is covered with 2 milligrams of sunscreen per square centimeter of skin, says Mark Chandler, president of ACT Solutions Corp., a sunscreen formulation company. That's about twice as much as studies have shown people really apply. Skipping on sunscreen cuts its effectiveness, which is particularly a problem when you start out with a low SPF. It takes a shot-sized glass amount to cover a bathing suit-clad body. CR asked the Personal Care Products Council, which represents sunscreen manufacturers, about the variation in SPF performance in our test. The group said our test methods weren't the same as the government's and therefore cannot be directly compared to a label claim. Sunscreens as a group did well in our test for UVA protection. 55 of the 68 received high UVA scores, meaning they screened out most of the UVA rays. Based on our results, all but to qualify as broad spectrum UVA and UVB coverage had discounted by the Food and Drug Administration. Those two, Black Girl Sunscreen Kids Lotion SPF 50 and Australian Gold Botanical Mineral Lotion SPF 30, were very close to the FDA threshold but didn't meet it in our test. Those companies also didn't reply to our request for comments. Pick your protection. CR's recommended sunscreens are the best option, but any of the ones in our ratings with an overall score of 61 or higher should provide acceptable protection. You'll find plenty of lotions and sprays to choose from in our ratings. Which would you use? Lotions have an edge. It's easier to see what you're applying and how much coverage you're getting than with a spray. Sprays may pose health hazards for some, especially children, because you can accidentally breathe them in and they can irritate the lungs. The best way to use a spray is to spritz it on your hands and then rub it into your body. If that seems impractical, spray sunscreen close to your skin and hold your breath when applying it. Never spray your face. Some people would rather use mineral sunscreens, those with zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, or both, as the only UV filtering ingredients, because they prefer non-chemical ingredients to find chemical ingredients, such as everbenzone, irritating. For many years, these have generally performed less well than our tested chemical ones. This year is no exception. None of the 20 mineral sunscreens we rated have an overall score of 61 or higher, and 14 have an average SPF level below 15. If you'd rather use a mineral sunscreen, choose one that averaged at least SPF 15 in our test and has Toxmar for UVA protection, such as Aveeno Positively Mineral Sensitive Skin Face Lotion SPF 50, Blue Lizard Sport Mineral Spray SPF 50+ and scented, and Badger Active Mineral Cream SPF 30 unscented. California Kids Super Sensitive Tinted Lotion SPF 30+ is also an acceptable choice. It averaged SPF 33, but is among the lowest scoring sunscreens for UVA protection. While you should always use enough sunscreen to reapply it every 2 hours, you're outdoors or immediately after swimming or sweating, that's especially important if you're using a sunscreen with a lower SPF. The truth about sunscreens for your face. Your face is one part of your body that's exposed to UV rays all year round, so daily care is the key. But despite all the marketing, you really don't need a face sunscreen to do that. There's no difference in the quality of protection versus a body sunscreen, says Joseph Zeichner, MD, an associate professor of dermatology at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. Face sunscreens and moisturizers with sunscreens use the same UV filtering ingredients, and you can use a body product on your face. Many are formulated to be lightweight and absorb quickly, such as La Roche-Posay Anthios Melt-in Milk Lotion SPF 60. If you have an oily, acne-prone skin, a face-specific oil-free sunscreen, such as Neutrogena Sport Face Oil-Free Lotion, may be a better choice. If you have dry skin, you may want a product with moisturizing ingredients, such as Black Girl Sunscreen. Make it with Matte Gel SPF 45 with shea butter and coconut oil. If you have sensitive skin, you may prefer a mineral sunscreen. These aren't among the top performers in our test, but Aveeno Positively Mineral Sensitive Sunscreen Face Lotion SPF 50 provides adequate protection. Face formulas with ceramides, hyaluronic acid, or colloidal oatmeal also moisturize and soothe. What about makeup with SPF? A foundation with SPF 30 would give you proper protection if you used enough of it, Zeichner says, but you'll have that caked-on look if you use the right amount, about a quarter-sized dollop for your face alone. Instead, put that amount of sunscreen on your face, give it several minutes to dry, and then apply the makeup. Think of the SPF it contains as a little extra protection. SPF, UVA, UVB, what's it all mean anyway? Short for sun protection factor, SPF represents how well a product guards against the damage from the sun's ultraviolet UVB rays, which are strongest between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. UVB rays can injure the top layers of your skin, and they're the chief cause of sunburn. SPF is usually explained as the amount of time it takes for skin to turn red. For instance, if you burn in 15 minutes, an SPF 30 would give you 450 minutes of protection. 15 times 30 equals 450. That's true up to a point. The UV dose is a big factor. The same 15 minutes of sun will result in a very different UVB amount depending on the location. Sea level versus high altitude, for instance. Time of day, time of year, the amount of cloud cover, and the color of your skin. An SPF 30 is not twice as protective as SPF 15, says Mona Gohara, MD, a dermatologist at Yale. And the difference in UV rays blocked between an SPF 30 and 50 is very small. An SPF 15 blocks about 93% of the rays, SPF 30 blocks 97%, and SPF 50 blocks 98%. Higher numbers don't absolve you from the rules of how much and how often to apply sunscreen. And SPF is only one factor to consider. You also need protection from UVA rays, which are present as long as there's daylight. These are rays that tan and age skin, and along with UVB, contribute to skin cancer. They penetrate deep into skin and damage the collagen and elastin, which give skin its elasticity. A sunscreen labeled broad spectrum will protect against both types of UV rays. If you don't see that term, it's likely that the product will shield your skin. It's unlikely that the product will shield your skin from UVAs. And here's a rundown on some of them. Ratings. Rub it in. We tested broad spectrum sun creams labeled SPF 30 or higher and all are water resistant for 80 minutes unless otherwise noted. And the number one is the Coppertone Water Babies Lotion SPF 50, which scored a 100. Comes in 8-ounce packages for $9. It's $1.13 an ounce. The number two is Everyday Humans Oh My Body Lotion SPF 50, which scored 83. It costs $17.50 for an 8-ounce package, $5.15 an ounce. Yuck. Oh, it comes in a 3-ounce package. Oh, goodness. The number third one is La Roche-Posay Athenios Melt-In Milk Lotion SPF 60. It cost $38 for a 5-ounce package, $7.60 an ounce. And Equate from Walmart Ultra Lotion SPF 50 scored a 68, and it only cost 91 cents an ounce. So you can see you've got to be kind of careful here about what you're looking for as cost is concerned. The next three are a Salomo Amazon Baby Lotion, Coppertone Sport 4-in-1 Performance Lotion, and Equate from Walmart Sport Lotion, all scored in the 60s and above. And those are the lotions. Let's take a look real quick at the sprays. Trader Joe's Spray SPF 50 scored a 74. It costs $1 an ounce. Neutrogena Beach Defense Water Sun Protection Spray scored a 71. It's $1.69 an ounce. Black Girl Sunscreen Make It Glow Spray at SPF 30 scored a 68. It cost $6.33 an ounce. And Sun Bum Premium Spray SPF 50 cost $3.08 an ounce. And these are the balances of stores in the 60s. Neutrogena Ultra Sheer Body Mist SPF 70. Australian Gold Ultimate Hydration Continuous Spray. Equate Walmart Sport Spray SPF 50, La Roche-Posay Anthelios Ultra Light Spray Lotion, Up and Up Target Sport Spray SPF 50, and Banana Boat Sports Ultra Spray SPF 100. And then there are the facial sunscreens. The only one that scored in the 60s was the Black Girl Sunscreen Make It Matte Gel SPF 45, and it cost $12.94 an ounce. And how do they test sunscreens? We use the Food and Drug Administration sunscreen testing protocol as a bottle. But as with all products, we do our own scientific laboratory-based testing to identify differences in performance and give consumers a more comparative evaluation. We buy sunscreens at retailers the way consumers do and test 3 samples of each product, each from a different manufacturing batches. For SPF, we test the sunscreens on 3 people, which is fewer than the FDA's protocol calls for, but we use a statistical analysis to verify our results. A technician applies a standard amount of each product on a 2x3-inch rectangle on a panelist back before they soak in water for 40 or 80 minutes based on the product's water-resistant claim. Then we expose smaller sections of the rectangle to 5 or 6 intensities of stimulated sunlight based on how quickly the panelist's skin burns without protection. We also use a reference sunscreen with a known performance to ensure testing accuracy. A day later, the technician examines the skin for redness and determines the sunscreen's SPF. To test for UVA, we apply sunscreen into plastic plates, expose them to UV light, and measure the amount of UVA and UVB rays that are absorbed. This test, like the UVA test in Europe, uses a process similar to the UVA test the FDA requires. But the test we use allows us to determine the degrees of UVA protection, though the FDA does not. The FDA test is a pass-fail. A sunscreen that just passes gets the same designation, broad spectrum, as one that screens out even more UVA. Our ratings are developed from the average results of all the SPA and UVA tests for sunscreen, as well as how much the average tested SPF varied from the SPF listed on the label. Take control of tech clutter. Old laptops, cell phones, power cords. Here's what to do with the stuff you no longer need and how to organize what you do use, including streamlining that overflow email box. Step-by-step rid of saving what you need, deleting the rest, and recycling the hardware. Gather and sort your gadgets. I think all of us have this problem. The first step in taking control of unwanted devices is to collect them in one spot that's convenient but out of sight, where you can work this project gradually. Then divide them into two categories. Devices that don't contain personal data on them, such as keyboards, headphones, and monitors, can go into boxes, ready to sell, donate, or recycle. The second group is for items that may have important files, such as laptops, phones, and CDs. In most cases, you'll want to copy and then erase those files. But if you don't care about retrieving the information and just want to make sure sensitive data is deleted, you can try a free service that will take the items off your hands and erase the data, in which case jump to sell, donate, or recycle on page 36, which we will look at in a few moments. That's one of the advantages of being have a magazine. Backup and wipe old phones. The photos, contacts, and messages from your old phone may already be copied into your new phone, but you can do it again to be safe. On Android phones, you go to Settings, tap the search icon, and enter Backup. Follow the prompts and wait 24 hours to make sure everything gets copied. If your phone has an SD card for extra storage, pop it into your computer's built-in SD card reader or an external reader, which costs around $10 from brands such as Kingston and SanDisk. iPhones. One option is to back it up to iCloud, but you may have to pay a monthly fee to get enough storage. Go to the settings, tap your name, iCloud Backup, or connect the phone to your computer with a cable. On a Mac, open the Finder and click on the iPhone. Then click General, Backup all data on your iPhone to this Mac. On a Windows PC, open iTunes. Then click to the iPhone button, Summary, Backup Now. Then erase the data on the phone. If it has a SIM card, remove and destroy it. Scissors should work. Search Settings for Reset. To wipe a laptop or desk computer. This process can take a while if you have trouble, say the device won't turn on, or you prefer to get help. Contact an electronics repair shop. An example, Best Buy's Geek Squad backup data backup service starts at $100. Ready to take it on yourself? A fast, simple backup method is to copy files onto an external hard drive. A 2-terabyte drive should be more than big enough, and you can then use it for extra storage with your current computer. Prominent brands such as Seagate and Western Digital offer them for about $60. Connect the drive to the old computer with a USB cable. Then use File Explorer for Windows or Finder on Mac to copy the files you want on the drive. Next, permanently wipe all personal data from the laptop. This takes a number of steps, which vary depending on the type and age of your computer. Search Erase Computer at Apple or Microsoft site for directions, or see cr.org/cleancomputer. Destroy old CD, DVDs, and floppy disk. Do you still have a pile of 3.5-inch floppy disk or desk drawer? You can buy an inexpensive reader to copy the files to your computer, or just see what's in them. A floppy disk drive on Amazon runs about $20, a DVD drive about $25. Once you have the files on your computer, make an obsolete disk unreadable. Cut scratches in the CD or DVD, and cut up the disk inside a floppy disk. Then add the pieces to your recycling pile. Sell, donate, or recycle. It's finally time to get your dusty old gadgets out of the house. Cash out. Trade-in programs will give you a quote for items like PCs and phones, a free shipping label, and cash or a gift card after they receive them. Options include Amazon.com, Amazon.com/trade-in, Apple, Apple.com/shop/trade-in, and Best Buy, TradeInBestBuy.com. Buyback World and Gazelle promise to delete all your personal data. Donate. Check with a local charity or go to World Computer Exchange Organization, which distributes tech from schools and programs across the globe. Dell reconnects with the Goodwill. It takes some items in any condition and promises to wipe your data. Don't throw your electronic items in the trash. Recycling them helps conserve resources and keeps toxic chemicals out of the environment. Your local recycling center may accept e-waste, or go to the earth911.com to find other options near you. Get rid of unwanted cables. What to do with that tangle of cords? Some can still be useful, even if you no longer want the gadgets they came with. For instance, if you're an iPhone user, you really can't have too many lighting cables for charging your phone. But other kinds of connectors are obsolete. One note, even if they're destined for the recycling pile, temporarily hang on to cables you might need to retrieve data from old laptops and other devices. Make more space on your devices. Eventually, your phone and laptop may start telling you they're running out of space, especially if you've saved a lot of photos and videos. Here's how to declutter your devices. Free up storages on your computer. Delete unused applications. The first step is delete old applications, which could take up a lot of room on a hard drive. You might not even be using the biggest space hogs. The Mac. Open Finder and go to the Applications folder. Select the app, then either drag it to the trash or right-click it, or click while holding down the Control button, and choose File, Move to Trash. Then right-click to the trash icon and choose Empty Trash. Windows. Go to the Settings. When you want to choose Apps, Apps plus Features, find the app you want to remove, then select More, Dash, Uninstall. Delete duplicates. Identical copies of files aren't just a waste of space. They're confusing when you don't know which file to open. There's an easy way to find out and delete those duplicates. Mac. Open Finder and search for, then parentheses 1, with quotation marks. Windows and File Explorers on Windows, search for the file name *1, and the same thing over again, then try 2 or 3-2. Use built-in utilities. These tools will recommend other ways to save space. On the Mac, you click the Apple icon, then System Settings, General, Storage. Windows, find the app called Disk Cleanup or a feature called Storage Sense under Start, Settings, System, and Storage. Declutter your desktop and Downloads folder. Having numerous files on your desktop is like having paper spread all over your actual desk. It can be hard to find what you need and stressful to look at. Your Downloads folder can get just as messy. Delete the files on your desktop you no longer need, such as that PDF ticket for an event long ago, as well as unneeded shortcuts to applications. Next, move files you do want to keep to the appropriate subfolder under your main Documents folder, or create a new subfolder if necessary. Now open your Downloads folder and scroll through the list to identify any files you want to keep, such as Download Bank Statements. Move them to the appropriate folder under Documents. Everything else, including installation files, .dmg on Mac, .exe on Windows, can be trashed. Free up storage on your phone. Quickly clean up an Android phone. You can delete unused apps, duplicate photos, junk files, and more with Files by Google app. Download it from the Play Store if it's not already installed. In the app, tap Clean on the bottom, then you can choose the kinds of files and apps you want to remove with just a few taps. Delete unused apps on an iPhone. Go to Settings, General, iPhone, Storage, to see a color-coded bar graph showing your storage usage. Below that, click on the recommended iOS, which will prevent you, such as enabling offload unused apps, which deletes the apps but keeps the user data in case you want to use the apps in the future. You'll also see on this screen the apps that are installed on your phone and their size. Tap on the ones you wish to delete. Optimize photos and videos. Photos and videos tend to take up the most storage space. Photo optimization stores full resolution versions in the cloud while leaving smaller versions on your phone. On an Android phone, go to Google Photos Settings and select Free Up Space. On an iPhone, go to Settings-Photos and enable optimizing iPhone storage. Now you'll have more room for more photos and videos. Tidy your digital accounts. OnLife Life brings certain headaches such as ever-changing passwords and an overflowing inbox. Here are files for those annoyances. Manage your passwords. Have you clicked a forgot password link in the past few months? Resetting your password because you can't remember it is no one's idea of a good time. For your security and to make logging into accounts as hassle-free as possible, we recommend you use a password manager which generates and saves long, unique passwords for all your online accounts. One thing you should never do is reuse the same password on multiple sites, which is a major security risk. In CR's test, OnePassword for $36 per year performed the best for its balance of privacy, security, and ease of use. Dashlane and Keeper both offer free and paid options. Once you start using a password manager, you need to remember just one password, the one you access all your stored login credentials. Make it long, at least 16 characters, unique, and memorable. You can use a series of random words separated by hyphens or spaces. It's fine to write this down in a notebook stored safely at home. Shut down old accounts. Many of us had long forgotten accounts with retailers, apps, medias, media sites, and more. This raises the odds of your data being misused or stolen. To find old accounts to close, search for emails with phrases like welcome to and confirm your email. To avoid phishing attacks, don't click on links in these emails. Instead, go to the company website for a fresh browser tab. Stop unwanted emails. Once you empty your inbox of marketing emails, you don't want to quickly fill back up. Search opt out and destroy. Marketeers give you a way to stop receiving their messages. A convenient tactic for collecting a lot of misses in place is to search your inbox for common marketing lingo like today only, while supplies last, limited time, coupon, and even privacy policy, and edit your preferences. Then in search results, open each mail and click on the unsubscribe link next to the email sender's name, if it's available, or scroll to the bottom of the email to find the unsubscribable link to remove yourself from the mailing list. Repeat with each sender and enjoy deleting the emails as you go. And if you empty your Gmail inbox, an inbox full of hundreds if not thousands of read and unread emails is distracting and can be a source of stress. It's much like a growing pile of physical mail. You could archive anything, but the emails will take up space and it could cost you money if you go over the account's free storage limit. How about a couple of dad jokes to close out the day? Instead of the John, I call my toilet the Jim. That way it sounds better when I say I go to the gym the first thing every morning. Did you hear about the kidnapping at school? It's okay. You woke up. Math teacher, if I have 5 bottles in one hand and 6 in the other hand, what do I have? The student, a drinking problem. My friend told me he had the body of a Greek god. I hardly had to tell him and explain to him that Buddha is not Greek. How is Christmas like your job? You do all the work and the fat guy in the suit gets all the credit. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. And aren't you glad after those terrible jokes and consumer reports? Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please don't hesitate to call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening, and please have a very joyful and faith 4th of July.